It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Well, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show. This is Gary Baker. Foster Brown does have the day off, but we have Ed Riddell here in studio. Shane Hamlin is joining us. And our special social guest host is Emily Hay. And Emily will be joining us as well. We've got 2 hours to talk about social, Facebook, Google, Google Glass, and LinkedIn. We'll be back in just a moment to do just that. And once again, it is Gary Baker, but Foster Brown has the day off. But Ed Riddell's here in studio, Shane Hamlin, and Emily Hay when we talk about, hey there, social media.
Excellent.
Ed, we've got news this week.
Yeah, on a personal note, because I am a committee chair for Boy Scouts. We have one of our Boy Scouts that is earning his Eagle, and It is Alex Hampf. He's going to be 18 this year. Congratulations. He's actually one of the few scouts that's actually made it from Tigers all the way up to Eagle, just like my son. I think there were 4 boys left out of the, 20-40 kids that started up.
Well, it's something like less than 2% of anybody that starts scouting ends up as an Eagle Scout, so quite a feat to stick with it and really the lot of requirements kudos to him.
Yeah, so, my son's going to be emceeing a ceremony today, I think, and they're having a senator go there and for Alex Hampf. And it's going to be a good time. I can't wait for my son to go through this.
Yeah,
so, and I know your son too as well.
Congratulations, Hampf.
Thank you.
Maybe
congratulations,
this year.
Alex.
Yeah. That's great. Getting on with technology. Samsung Galaxy came out this week with their new Galaxy 4, right?
Yeah, it's a beautiful machine.
So
we still call them machines, isn't that something?
what do you call it these days? Is it a phablet, a phone and a tablet? Is it a cross between a tablet and a computer? I don't know what you'd call
personal
that.
Personal technology, I don't know. It's a big phone.
Yeah, and phone. And Samsung makes some great units. You got HTC, Motorola, Samsung, of course, Apple. Samsung makes some great devices, and they also make a lot of other electronics, and they have the market on the glass.
Yeah,
on right? I mean, aren't they withholding a lot of that technology from Apple supposedly?
There's lawsuits. And talking about Apple, is Apple just catching up now? I thought back when the iPhone 5 came out that they really closed the gap with the Android phones. That gap's widening again.
Yeah, I think from the initial launch of the iPhone, where they were so far ahead of everybody else, I think they've always kind of been running behind everyone else now. It seems like they've been playing catch-up a lot lately.
Right.
Yeah. Android and even my beautiful Windows phone. There's some things on here that I know the Apple people just can't do.
When you think about it, you have just Apple, and as good as they are, and they really are very good at innovation and coming up with easy user interfaces, it's just one company, and you can only concentrate on so many things, and they have so many products that they're trying to concentrate on now. Are they falling behind just because Samsung can really concentrate on hardware and Google can really concentrate on the Android system and some of their apps? And, and you find that there's a whole ecosystem behind the Android-ish industry side. What do you think?
I don't know, but I've always noticed that with some of these Android phones, the speed is so much faster than some of these Apple phones. It's, and I'm always... I always get, I don't want to say ripped on, but everyone in my family are all Apple people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And now I've got this, I'm a lone wolf with my Apple, my Windows phone. And we're always
That's a great phone.
It's so fast.
Yeah.
And right. We're always competing against each other.
You know? And nobody has it all, right? Apps.
No.
You know, when you look at the apps, Apple.
Apple
right?
has the apps.
And I love my Apple iPhone. My iPhone 5, I really like the phone. But I know that there are people that out there, you know, Google Voice is certainly better than Siri, mm-hmm. right? There's no mm-hmm. doubt about it. When, I don't know what the application's called on the Android, I should know this, but they just draw pictures instead of texting and it comes out and it's beautiful. They're so fast with doing that. I'm jealous because I can't text with my iPhone as fast.
Oh, you mean the typing and the
right.
Yeah, the handwriting.
The swish typing.
Another voice is called Genie, I believe, or Genius. Genius button. Yep. I think a lot of them have it where they push
the
it.
Google Voice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so, hint, Verizon. I you won't let me upgrade mine.
what's going on with that?
Well, they won't. They've locked it to a specific value. You know how so many of the companies, when you buy it, they abandon it, and if you want an upgrade, you have to get a new phone, even though this phone is perfectly capable of upgrading to Jelly Bean or even newer operating systems of that.
So they
won't refuse.
Let you do it. They want you to buy a new phone, right? That's what they want.
Yes, exactly.
Emily, what kind of phone do you use?
Well, I'm listening here when Shane was talking about the speed of the Windows phone. I was giving you the Apple dirty look because everything I use is Apple, but I've never even realized how fast those phones can be. So
Well, I was watching somebody the other day texting. And I couldn't believe the way they text because they literally just drag their finger. Their finger never leaves the keyboard. They just drag their finger, and wherever they stop, they'll drag it up
second.
To T. And it's fast.
Yeah. Well, wasn't the Flick typing, isn't that the new BlackBerry feature as well?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I haven't paid much attention to BlackBerry because I think, I quote my son when he says, it's just so 5 minutes ago. Right?
Even the new ones?
Yeah.
Well, but they're really great. But, the BlackBerry's lost so much of the market.
It's kind
of like,
it's
kind of like Palm. I know they'll stick around till somebody buys them for some piece of technology or another and embeds it into something else. And I just,
I hope they stick around. But you're right. A lot of corporations have abandoned it and they're looking at the Androids, the iPhones, and other smart devices.
It just took them so long to come out with the BlackBerry 10, which is a great device. Mm-hmm. I've seen one. I haven't really played with it, but it certainly, has, has captured at least some imagination, but I think it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk social. We're going to talk Facebook, LinkedIn, Google Glass. What's that all about? We'll have to wait till after this commercial break, and we're going to let Emily Hay from Hay Social Media drive our next discussion. Well, Foster has the day off, but the rest of us are here in studio, ready to talk social. Big news, LinkedIn has acquired Pulse. This is kind of interesting, some say, because you think of LinkedIn as a place where your resume is, and maybe there's a few groups now that you might belong to, but they've been more and more moving toward aggregating content and especially personalized content. Emily Hay from Hay Social Media, you're our expert here on social media. This is an interesting and big news here this week.
Sure. I don't know about you guys, but I love LinkedIn. I mean, I use it for my professional connections, and I do like, personalized content coming through from the publications that I read, but I don't spend too much time on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
No.
I know HR folks do, because if you're looking for a job or if you're looking to hire people, that's a great place to do it.
And or if you're mentoring people.
Or if you're mentoring people, right? We use it a lot for our groups. I actually have a fairly good-sized group up there in the career networking space and trying to help people find jobs in the IT space. It's great for that, but does this make sense? Does it make sense for them to buy Pulse?
Well, Gary, you have to tell me what Pulse is, because actually I've not heard of it. Or Emily.
Well, this was something that that they did this last week, and it's Bloomberg Business Week is where I saw it, and they're talking about a news reading app. It's a little bit like the problem that, well, in fact, it's just the opposite mm-hmm. of what Google has decided to do with their Google Reader this week. Same, mm-hmm. you know, in the same space, Google has this news aggregation device or application called Google Reader, and they say July 1st they're going to discontinue it. They're not going to aggregate your news sources anymore, your RSS feeds.
Oh, interesting.
You know, we see Google going one way and saying, nope, we're not going to be in the personalized news aggregation business. We're going to stop Google Reader, which has everybody up in arms.
Apparently, yeah.
Over 100,000 people have signed a petition on change.org, which, by the way, if you guys haven't gone to change.org, great site, especially for, you know, this kind of social change. Mm-hmm. And in this case, they're talking about technology. Google's gonna stop unless they're successful at change.org with the 100,000 plus people now signing that petition. Google's gonna stop using Google Reader.
Google used to be for the small guy, but you know, it seems like the larger they get, the less they're looking out for the small guy. I mean, it's been around a while, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Now they're just so huge, and you do have a lot of people that supposedly rely on that. They've pulled some very good tools that they've had. Great that they've created them, and they're great ideas, but they never really took off. But they do have quite a following, like the Google Read.
I was just going to ask, do any of you guys use Google Reader? Because I actually never got into it.
Really?
No.
So you're not going to go sign that petition on change.org, eh?
You know, personally, no. But to read that there was that passionate group of users, I totally respect that. But also Google's official remark on it, of course, is that they just want to focus on less products and do a better job at it. And I mean, as a small business owner, I couldn't live without Google Docs, Google
right.
Forms. So some of those tools are you know, paramount.
So where do you go for like a news aggregation, personalized news site? Do you use one?
Twitter or Facebook? I mean, I know that's not really the apples to apples, but I was thinking when you were asking about LinkedIn, I thought, what are the applications I go to over and over again each day? Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah. Really? Mm-hmm. And Facebook has decided to jump into that space, right? The personalized newspaper, you can take and say, I'm interested in these kinds of things. And supposedly they're now going to be developing a capability to provide you personalized news.
Well, sure. So Mark Zuckerberg, I guess he used that analogy of a newspaper, and there was, you know, a number of articles talking about how that's kind of an odd analogy since the newspaper is obviously
Facebook.
right. However, since 2006, they're saying this is the biggest change to happen to the newsfeed. And I just last week clicked on, you know, add me to the wait list. So I personally am not using the new newsfeed yet.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of you guys?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you have to.
I do more on LinkedIn and less on Facebook.
Okay. It was pretty cool. If you go to the new newsfeed section, you can click join waitlist and it'll show you which of your friends are already using it, kind of like when the timeline rolled out.
Sure.
But to your point about a more personalized experience on Facebook, Gary, they're saying that they had all these focus groups and people kept saying, at the end of the day, my newsfeed's cluttered. And what they meant by cluttered was content, not so much design.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's now they're doing away with the small thumbnails, larger thumbnails, and also different news feeds for different subjects.
So, you know, we see, you know, Google kind of getting out of that space. We see Facebook jumping in. We see LinkedIn jumping in. What else do you guys do for news? Do you go to one single source? Do you go to a couple sources? Do you use an aggregation?
I personally use Outlook. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, some of the newer Outlook, you know, 2012 or the new 13.
Yeah, 2013, yeah.
You can actually, now that you're not going to be able to use your Google Reader, you can actually import your Google Reader, export it, and import it into Outlook and have everything right there.
So
for
all
you.
The RSS feeds everything. Will now come through Outlook.
And it's a very simple, step.
You know, we're all faced with not only a proliferation of applications and
information overload,
but the information itself, right? The content is just
It's just, how do you keep track of it all?
I'm just going to have
to check. I find myself, and I don't know if it's my age or I'm just sucking in too much information. I'll read an article later in the day and I'm like, I think I already read this article today.
Isn't that awful? From a different source or from the same source?
Same source. Oh, isn't that awful?
No, I was just listening to this tech podcast that was talking about how the founder of Branch, and Branch is now invested in by Twitter.
Yep.
Anyway, he said that 90% of people are content consumers, 9% are content curators, and only 1% are actual content creators. Mm-hmm. So just wait till the rest of everyone starts creating content, and then we'll really be
But 1% is a lot.
Well, that's
right? a lot of sources. And, there was always the thought back when the web was young, right, that we could all become our own news reporter now, and everybody's going to blog, and everybody's going to have have discussion forums, and we saw that initially, but now a lot of those are going away.
Well,
right?
Isn't that what
people
Facebook?
Don't have time to...
Isn't that what Facebook is, where someone can just quickly state one paragraph or a couple sentences? But a lot of people on there do. I'm going to the grocery store, but a lot of people. I just had a great dinner at this restaurant, and I want to give them kudos. So in a way, they are contributing. But through the social media.
Yeah.
And I have to, you say it might be going away. I think it's even getting bigger. It's amazing how fast things happen now. And that's, without getting into a whole world political view. I mean, someone across the world can suffer political tyranny and instantly the world knows about it.
Right.
Or like this morning, I seen a video come across my Facebook account of some guy on vacation dancing. And I asked my wife, did you see that? Oh, yeah, I seen that already. And it was just put out this morning.
Yeah.
I mean, the world has seen this guy doing exercise video overnight. And it's millions of views. It's amazing how fast stuff happens.
And that's what Google said when they decided that they announced they're going to get rid of Reader by July 1st.
Yeah.
They said RSS feeds not so much. Social media is where it's all going to be, and it's the individual contributing, and that is going to be much more important than the gated communities of they're not so gated, but because anybody can start an RSS feed. But, so is Google right?
Well, the Google Reader is unique because it has such a nice – it's got a nice graphical interface.
Right.
It puts everything in almost like a newspaper or news or a magazine.
Yeah. And
where Outlook
– it organizes it, right?
And Outlook, to me, I use it, but it's just text-based like email.
Right.
So anything graphical that people can put their eyes on and see right there, I don't blame.
Well, we're going to talk more about this because I'm sure that as LinkedIn and Facebook ramp up, as Google ramps down, something replaces that. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be here every Saturday. Or when we come on your station to talk about things like this. We're going to come back with a really interesting guest next. Well, we don't have Foster here with us, but Ed Riddell and Shane Hamlin and Emily Hay, we're here, and we're talking social media, but there's some other kind of really neat kind of applications that are really starting to catch on, and you have a friend that developed one.
Absolutely, Gary. So as we all know, Detroit is really having this startup revival, and there's a friend of mine who's going to be joining us as a guest in just a minute here, and his name is Than Tran, and he's the founder of Schedule. I actually met Than not too long ago at a D New Tech event. He leads that meetup group. So you talk about, learning about what local entrepreneurs are getting into. Than is a perfect example.
Than, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hi, Than.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Tell us about this really interesting application that you developed.
First, I want to say thank you very much for having me on the show. And this software is called Schedule. It's like a full schedule, but cut the schedule in half, so we call it Schedule. So it's a cancellation management software that helps medical offices who tends to overbook, or because people tend to cancel, and so they overbook, or they implement cancellation fee, but no one really likes to pay penalizing fee for late minute cancellation. So this is where we come into play, where the software reminds patients of their upcoming schedule, which is very common with other scheduling software. But where we differ is that we not only, once the patient replied with a cancellation, we reschedule them for the office, and then now that cancellation slot that's open, we end up contacting patients that are on the wait list that's on our software but managed by the office, and we contact them via email, text, or a phone. So they never have to play phone tag.
You mean if I went to my doctor's office, I'm not going to be sitting there for hours because they overbooked and I'm waiting and waiting for my turn just so that they're full? Other times, if they didn't do that, they would have no patients and probably have to charge me more because they had some cancellations.
You're exactly right. And I think we've all experienced that in the past where we sit there in the waiting room just to see our own doctor. And the whole reason for that is because doctor offices, they tend to overbook because a lot of people cancel last minute or has no shows. So that's the whole issue now that we're trying to solve, is that everyone has cancellations and no shows. Medical offices, and if you want to extend from medical or healthcare, you can get into, well, we have our vertical market. We can go into like spas, salons, or restaurants who have long wait lists of people who want to see their business sooner. And we just give them the opportunity that if there's an opening, we contact them for you, and it's automated.
Well, you know, Than, obviously, you've identified a problem, you're building a solution for it, and you've actually been very active in some of the pitch competitions, I mean, really around the state of Michigan. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have won three competition, I would say grants. The first one was Start Guarding, and this is a great, this is also a testimony to the state of Michigan and how much support we're getting, not only for me, but for the startup community in the state of Michigan. So we got Start Guarding out of Grand Rapids. We won $5,000 because of our new idea. And then second was Live Work Detroit, which is organized by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. We won $10,000 on a pitch competition. And then just this week, we won $1,000 from the Green Light Business Model Competition in the category that is labeled Fastest Growth Potential. So, again, this goes back to the state of Michigan. What they're doing is trying to encourage people who has great ideas and who has, who needs the funding to get it started, and which, you know, we're fairly new. We fit in that category. And so, we've done it, and we're able to get grants from the state as well as from other competitions.
You know, so it reminds me of New Enterprise Forum, and this is a group out in Ann Arbor. I think it's 27 years ago was the first meeting, and they hold monthly meetings every month on the third Thursday of every month in Ann Arbor at the Holiday Inn North Campus. There's a value in just getting prepared for that pitch, right? Even if you don't win, some of the people that didn't win, you did, which is wonderful. You got the money. But even some of the people that didn't win, just to go through the exercise to get ready to pitch that makes it easier for them to go out and pitch other private investors or other startup venture capital or seed capital firms. Have you seen the same kind of competition in all of the different pitch competitions that you've been in?
Yes, actually, you bring up a good point. I mean, being an entrepreneur, and a lot of people who have came up with ideas and have a startup, especially in this economy, some of them are they started a business not because they wanted to, it's because they have to. They are put in that position. And one of the things I do mentor and coach other entrepreneurs. One of the things I always tell them is two things. One is that go out and sell your product. And the way you do that is, you basically want to validate your product by getting at least one customer, because everyone thinks their baby is the most beautiful until you share that with someone. So that's number one. And then number two is that when you do that, you're actually somewhat pitching. Again, there's always different type of pitches. In each of the competition I was in, there are different type of adjustment I have to do because of the audience that I was pitching to. So again, that's where you kind of strategically set yourself. But in regards to pitching, yes, it is very important. And I think that regardless, I mean, of what type of line of industry that you're in, I think that you have to sell your product. And in regards to selling, literally going out door-to-door selling it, but also being able to articulate what your product does in a short period of time, like one competition was 3 minutes, another one was 5 minutes. So, again, adjusting yourself, knowing your audience, and being able to articulate yourself, it's so important. And in regards if you win or not, I think it brings value not only to you, who is the owner of the business, but to your product and idea, too, because you are the thing that people look at when they think of your product.
Sure. So what would you tell other entrepreneurs? Where would you tell them to go for help or to get involved in these kinds of competitions? Because everybody could use a grant here or there.
Exactly. I mean, unfortunately, we were lucky this year. This is actually my second startup, too. So, again, my first startup, I mean, it was a struggle, and it took me almost 5 to 5.5 years for the time we developed and sold the technology. But with this one, I'm hoping to cut that in half because the experience I exposed. So I can tell you, nothing happens overnight. It's my experience from my last startup that got me here. Now, to your question about where can you get these type of resources, State of Michigan is probably one of the best, if not the top-notch state that gives you those type of resources. If you look at just all the smart zones that's around the state, that's number one. And these smart zones are run by MEDC and resources that are coming from there. Then you got nonprofit organizations that are like in the city of Detroit, because I know I'm very big in the city around the startup community, and they're like the tech town of the world. And then you got the Detroit Economic Growth Corporation. Then you also have meetups, and mm-hmm. one of the things about meetups in the city of Detroit or in the state of Michigan alone, we're one of the fastest growing meetups in regards to technology in the world. I mean, there was a study that was done last year that showed that there were so many meetups in the state of Michigan that that kind of was, you know, surpassing other even big cities. And I even have a meetup called the DNewTech, short for Detroit New Tech. And we don't only focus on technology, but also non-tech. But here's another resource for you. You're talking about the NEI. With the Detroit New Tech, we meet the first Wednesday every month because we found out that, you know, Wednesday of the first month of the month was never a popular time, so we took that spot. And then secondly, we always go out to a venue that's at a landmark in Detroit, because then we bring the startup community and the entrepreneurs out to the city so they can take a look at what the city has and hopefully build their business here. And then lastly, we bring in some type of investor or fund manager or, you know, someone who's the executive of an incubator, and they share their stories, and then we bring in 5 startup companies to pitch their idea. And we always tell our presenters that be on the top of your game, because there's always at least one investor or fund manager listening to you, and that's our guest speaker.
And Than, again, you and I've hung out with you at the DNewTech. I've been to that. I think that's every point you made was really great, but especially those meetups, because it doesn't matter what level you are, what phase of your business you are. Those meetups, they're free and great networking.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Than, we really appreciate you coming on the Internet Advisor Show and telling us about your new product and about how other people that are in your situation could maybe plug into some of the resources here at the state. So thank you.
No problem. And please, everyone, please check out Sketchful. That's SCHEDFULL.com. If you're interested in helping your business to be more efficient and productive, we can help.
Well, we have a special treat. It's something we've been doing the last few weeks, and we're going to continue, and it's always going to be this time on our show, and that is a special relationship we have with MyTech News and its publisher, Mike Brennan. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Thanks, Gary. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Mike. You and I go back a long time, I don't know, close to 20 years, I'm guessing. You've been in the news and the tech news business here in Michigan for even longer than that, and you have a great e-newsletter called My Tech News. You really ferret out some of the great technology and the news about that technology here in the state of Michigan. We are developing this relationship where this time every week, you're going to come in and tell us something a little bit about what you think are the top three or four stories here in Michigan. You ready?
Indeed, Gary. I am.
All right. What do you see going around this great state here in technology?
There's a couple of interesting stories that sort of say something. Manpower came out with their outlook they do every quarter on hiring, and Detroit came in kind of really low overall, like only 5% net gain on hiring. But at the same time, another group came out, Dice.com, that said that, Detroit ranked in the top five nationally for the number of tech jobs available. You know, last year it was about 800 tech jobs advertised on average, but this year is 1,000 tech jobs advertised on average every day. That's kind of weird where, you'd have that sort of thing going on where Detroit overall not so good for hiring. But for tech jobs, they can't just find enough people out there. So it tells you if you really have great tech skills, certainly if you can do it in Detroit or any place else for that matter, because you're really in demand right now.
What that should tell us is that there's just too many job openings for the number of people we have that are qualified to take those jobs.
Yeah, for a variety of reasons. I mean, it certainly isn't for lack of cranking out people out of our university system. I mean, the Inforum study, they have a program earlier, about a week ago, I guess now, where the presidents of the U of M and MSU came in and some of the Wayne State, and they talked about how every year they graduate 14,000 people with great tech skills. But the problem we have is many of those folks, bright lights of other big cities elsewhere, particularly Chicago and New York. And they go off there, rather than staying here in Michigan. So, we're graduating the people to fill these slots, but we just can't keep them here for some reason. So.
And that's part of what's going to be addressed at the Governor's Economic Summit starting tomorrow night here in Detroit. And we'll go for the next few days trying to talk about how we not only retrain people, but retain people. So we've got people here in the state, and many of them are freshly college educated, that are leaving, and we have to find a way to keep them, to retain them. What else is going on in the news?
Well, this sort of is a public service to our loyal Internet Advisor readers out there, readers in my case, but listeners in yours, that Google has come out with a new site called Hacked Sites Information Series, where you would help for Hacked Site is the proper name. And so if that happens to you, and it's happened to me, I'll tell you, and it's a really big pain, but if it happens to you, Google's come up with a site now that gives you videos, that gives you tutorials, that will say, okay, well, here's how you can fix this. Because if you go out and hire one of these people that we can't find anyway, right, to do the job, it costs a lot of money, but if you have a little bit of skill, you can do it on your own. You can find that at www.google.com/webmasters/hacked. So again, it'll happen, trust me, but so now there's some help from Google.
Well, that sounds great. And people can go to our site at internetadvisor.net and go then to your site at mytechnews.com and then sign up so that they get this even before you come on the air and tell us about it every week.
Yeah, there you go. That sounds like a great idea.
Why not subscribe to your magazine or to your e-newsletter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We could do that, too. So
what else?
Well, security. I hate to always keep beating this horse, but I just found it interesting this week that we found out from an ex-CIA head who was down in Houston at a summit for the oil industry and telling them that, it's just a matter of time before they get hacked and that, security breaches, particularly for the oil industry, where they use, SCADA commands and some of the older line on-off kinds of things that are so easy to hack these days, that's going to happen. But at the same time, then we hear from China, they came to the United States, or they didn't come to the United States, but they said to the United States, we've been, saying each other is hacking each other so much. Why don't we sit down face-to-face and discuss this? Well, of course, the funny thing here is probably much of the hacking that the ex-CIA chief was talking about that was going to happen to the oil industry, chances are a lot of that's going to come from China. So what's that all about, right? So,
You know, it's interesting that that you have really become a security expert, in because you're reporting on so many of the problems with security, and had written a book which they can get to from your site called Cyber Stiletto.
Yep.
That was fiction, but it's not fiction anymore. It doesn't seem to be. It almost as if you were writing a documentary.
Well, yeah, when Richard Steenan, who you've had on the show many times, when him and I were collaborating on that a couple of years ago, at that time some of this stuff seemed a little crazy, but now it's headlines.
Well, Mike, do you have anything else for us?
There was a report that came out of Michigan Virtual University. You remember that? That was a big experiment about a decade ago. Oh, we're going to take all of our universities and put them all online, and that's going to be the way we're going to go, blah, blah, blah. Well, it didn't quite work out that way, but they're saying, though, going forward, in a new report called Moving Michigan Farther Faster, that personalized learning and the transformation of learning in Michigan is really a lot of that's going to come online, just because there's so many things that, you know, people like it, it's easy to use. And it seems to be a whole lot better organized now than it was 10 years ago when MVU started. So
sure, and they've been doing also the Michigan Virtual High School, and that has helped quite a bit bring online learning to the high schools around the state.
Oh, tremendously, yeah. I mean, it's really helped a lot of kids get their GEDs and all that. So that, I mean, if you don't even have a basic high school degree, gosh, you know, but now it's anymore a basic college degree has become the basic degree you got to have any kind of success in this workplace.
Mike, one last thing really quickly. Got anything for us?
A couple of good pieces of news that the U.S. Business School rankings came out, and the U of M came in 14th nationally. Well, our friends in East Lansing, MSU, came in 43rd. And then there was another study that came out from another group that just looked at overall university rankings worldwide. And again, the University of Michigan came in 14th worldwide. So,
wow.
I mean, we do have great institutions in the state, though. We just got to, you know, get people to use them more in whatever way, whether they want to do it, you know, in person or online.
Yep.
But you know, there's certainly better ways and great ways in this state to get your technical skills down so you can get all these jobs that are out there.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, Mike Brennan from mytechnews.com, thank you very much, and we'll hear from you next week.
All right, thanks. And one last word, Aaron Gobrah, I want to say that out to all my Irish friends out there. Enjoy this weekend.
Absolutely. So. Thank you for that wish to all of our Irish friends. Back for the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show after the news with Gene Fogle.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast.
Well, this is Gary Baker. Foster Brown has the day off. This is our second hour, so we're going to be answering questions. We are not live on our flagship station this week, so we are going to call some people back that have contacted us during the week on our website at internetadvisor.net. Remember that if you ever want to contact us, you can do the same thing, and we'll try to answer it either now or on the air or on email. Well, thank you for listening to us here on the Internet Advisor Show. We are going to make the next hour all about our listening audience, and in this case, our emailing audience, because they've emailed us some questions that, because we're not live on the air this week, we are going to take and call them back, and we have our first caller.
Caller
on the phone is Sidekick. Sidekick, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. Thank you very much. We called you back because you had a problem that you contacted us about. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. I was looking for a work-at-home business that I could do. And I ran across this one opportunity that said, work at home for free. I'll give you step-by-step instructions to do it, and we'll walk you through everything. And so I started doing the videos,
looking at the videos. What was the kind of company this was, or the kind of work?
I never even got to that point.
Oh, really?
It never even said exactly what type. It just said work from home. It was some kind of financial. The person was like a financial investor, I want to say.
Okay.
I gathered. I'm not sure.
So you didn't get very far. So what happened?
No, I didn't get. I watched a couple of the videos, the step-by-step online videos, and then they said in order to pursue it, you had to go to this thing called TrialBucks, B-U-X, and that was part of the video. You had to go to this other website and sign up with them. Now, the sign-up was free. However, it said that you had to qualify with 5,000 points.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For this TrialBucks.
All right. So it was free, but you needed points.
That's where I kind of was wondering a little bit, because in order to qualify, and I was looking for it, obviously it said work at home for free. So I did the TrialBucks, and I was going to do surveys, and I was going to do different things to do the free things to qualify. But it would have taken next to impossible to qualify that way.
Yeah.
You had to purchase something from this TrialBucks.
Of course.
In order to qualify. Now, there was an option to, as they say, I think they said, like, to speed through all of the qualifying process, you can, kind of bypass it.
How much would that cost you?
I don't know. It was like at least, I believe, $29 or something.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I'm gonna tell you, what you're doing is you're participating in someone else's kind of on the side, under the table, sleazy kind of home business.
Scam.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like it was back in the day where it was a newspaper clipping back when we read newspapers that you could work from home by putting out newspaper ads in magazines and doing the same thing to other people and vice versa. I'll tell you how to do it for $29. And when you find out this is what you do, I just did to you, you do it to someone else. You know, here's the thing about working at home. There's tons of you see it on late night TV, you see it everywhere, work for home, here's the thing. If you don't have any skills to offer anyone, if you're not a nurse or a computer engineer or a graphic designer or something like that, let's be realistic. You've got to have something to offer to work from home. I mean, you can't just turn on your computer and expect money to come flowing in.
Right.
I know computers, so I can offer myself up as a technician on an online tech site, or I do graphic arts, or I can offer my graphic arts up to people and do these kind of things. So it's such a scam out there, and there's so much of it out there, you've got to be very, very cautious.
It's out there because they can be, right? It's so easy to perpetrate a scam these days.
And especially because they didn't give you all the information up front. So they're like trying to lure you in and reel you in,
Right. And it said that it was an online thing, we'll give you your own website, we'll help you step by step, as they all say. I was just trying to look for part-time at homework, extra money, and they do. They didn't give everything up front.
Yeah.
You have to qualify, which is that's part of their deal, is once you qualify, what they give you is an ID to do this TrialBucks thing. And then once you get people interested in you, then once you refer them to TrialBucks, that's, I believe, probably where you're going to start getting the money. Yeah.
So how do we help Sidekick and everybody else out there listening, how do we help them ferret out what's real and what's a phishing expedition with a PH phishing?
Well, if it costs you money to move on to the next level, it's no good.
Right.
And if they don't provide you a real telephone number,
yes,
it's probably a...
So is there a way that you can go to a site like Snopes?
Well, I mean, here's for instance, if you were to, you know, Forbes or something, look on there. They keep track of a lot of online businesses, and they'll tell you, you know, what are some of the legitimate businesses. And they're going to tell you, if you're not, you know, don't have a skill set, the get rich or just get some money by sitting home and turning a computer doesn't exist. You've got to offer something.
So how do you tell? Do you go just Google it? Do you take an... So this is something I think... Sidekick, you brought up a very good point. We're going to have to take a break. But
okay.
I think if you'll...
hang on with us.
We'll hang on.
Sure.
In fact, hang on and let's talk a little bit about it when we come out of this break, okay?
Okay.
You're listening to the Internet Advisor. We're going to tell you how to tell if it's a scam or not. That up next. Well, welcome back. In the last segment, we were talking to Sidekick about scams or about phishing, about reeling us in, about being, you know, some sort of con online. And there are a lot of con artists, and it's easier to do online today than it was any other way before, through the newspaper or, you know, door to door.
So much can be anonymous.
And it's hard to tell. I sent you guys this week some phishing things that came up that were took me to LinkedIn. It looked exactly like LinkedIn, a message from LinkedIn. It wasn't, right? And there were a couple others the same way, you know, that it just, they were cons, they're trying to get me to do something. Typically, that might be click on this image
or click on this link,
and it puts a keylogger or puts some software on my machine that will maybe turn it into a robot that they could use, a bot that they could use then to proliferate other types of attacks.
Yep, or it steals your IDs and passwords for your bank accounts.
Or steals my own information, right? So, We really appreciate Sidekick coming on and asking us these questions.
Right.
What do we tell her and everybody else? What do we do about phishing?
Well, I mean, this really wasn't a phishing because it really sounded like Sidekick went out and was exploring how to earn money from home. So in that scenario, things are a little bit different. She wasn't, you know... People, if you're receiving information unsolicited,
it's a con.
That's a con.
Right.
But when you go out there, how do you know what a con is? Because you were actively searching, and that's the difficult part in this.
And you were actively searching, right, Sidekick?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there is like golden rules. You know, one thing that I always like my son gets into this all the time. Gets conned it, and I want to say con. He gets into these things all the time.
Yeah.
Because you know, these younger generation want to get rich quick. You know, they don't want to wait for things. So
It's written down. Yeah. It's on the internet. Yeah. It must be true. Well, it's not.
One thing to always qualify a company is, do they have a physical location? Is there somewhere you can actually go to and see these people and meet these people, a phone number, someone to actually call them? You know, you always want to... Go ahead.
This guy said that he personally was located in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, okay, well, what's your address? You know, where are you located? Yeah. How can I, you know, and those things, once you start questioning and probing, you'll see that their walls will start falling down. They'll start crumbling.
Yeah, what's your phone number? What's your fax? What's your email address?
Yeah, they have a phone number, but I didn't try it, so I don't know.
Yeah. And if you get if you get an address, who knows, they're at that address, right? So you go to the white pages, right? What else do you go to? Snopes, for instance.
Snopes.
Right? That's SNOPES.com, and it's an urban legend site. It says, this is an urban legend. Don't fall for it. This is a fishing expedition. Yep. Don't fall for it.
Right.
But there are lots of other urban legend types of sites are anti-fishing, and that's spelled with a P-H, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
So not... You know, but it's trying to reel you in, right?
And it sounds like on this one, because you, Sidekick, actually went out and investigated it. Her gut feeling was like, this just doesn't sound or feel right. But because she wasn't approached and she actually approached them, she didn't listen to her gut instincts. I'm going to go try it a little bit further until I find out, until they start asking for credit cards, which is good for you.
Right,
but you didn't go with your initial gut reaction, which is something's fishy here.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah. Another thing is if they don't, they should have to actually create a product or service. If they don't have that, then most likely it's a scam. Or because you don't see, you know, General Electric on GE on at 3 a.m. Looking for people to work from home, promoting their, you know, their web services.
There are companies out there that through affiliate programs they say, look, you put up a website. And anybody you draw through your website will give you a little piece of the action, right? You're an affiliate. We give out affiliate fees. You can be an affiliate. Now you have to pay up front, and then you have to figure out how to get people to come to your site and click off to, you know, whatever. And they're legitimate places that you click off to.
Yeah.
But it's a way for them to allow you to advertise, and you pick up a little bit. Well, you have to have the skill to figure out how you're going to get people to come through your site. So they're legitimate, but they still might not necessarily be the right thing for you. Not talking about those necessarily. I'm talking about things that are just not legitimate, right?
Right,
yeah.
Okay. So Sidekick, thank you. I hope this answered some of your questions, and hopefully we've answered a number of questions for other people that might be hearing this on their podcast.
It did answer most of my questions. I do have one question for you guys.
Okay, shoot.
And first of all, I'd like to say thank you so much for doing this. It's been a great help, in revealing a lot of these things that are going on that people get caught up in. But one more question I had.
Sure.
Is there legitimate work from home sites?
Oh, sure.
I'm sure there are.
Yeah, but I don't know what they – I wouldn't know where to go. Kelly Services would do that. I mean, I have some friends, and they're in high school, and they do dictation. Right. They get emailed WAV files or MP3s, and they're 20 minutes long, and for 20 minutes they just do dictation for an advertising company that is doing a bunch of interviews that make commercials.
Yeah.
And what they do is they just – literally, they just sit there and type – and they'll do, and they get paid by the hour because they know 20 minutes of spoken is like 2 hours worth of typing, and they get paid, you know.
And you've got.
I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to take another caller, and we'll try to help you a little bit. We'll look at some of the home work from home sites.
Oh, that's okay. I appreciate that.
Okay, let's go out to Gary in Plymouth. Gary in Plymouth, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hello.
Hi, Gary. Hey, thank you for contacting us and allowing us to call you back so that you can ask your question and we can maybe help you here.
Yes. Last week I heard you guys talking about backing up a disk for your laptop.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't write it down. So I emailed you the question, and Ed Rudell emailed me back. And
oh, I did.
I just haven't.
That's good.
Good.
That's good news.
That's a great question because not only by asking it, even though we may have answered it, which is what we try to do all week, Ed does a great job of trying to stay up with this. As you can expect, we get quite a bit of email and asking for help. But it's now an opportunity for us to help others. So how would he do this?
Well, first, Gary, what operating system are you running?
Windows 7.
Oh, perfect. So, I mean, and probably in the email what I described is that Microsoft provides the ability, and Shane, please correct me if I'm wrong, but they provide you the ability when you go into Control Panel under Backup, you can create a system image. Is that for all versions of Windows 7, or was that just for specific versions?
No, actually, most Windows will allow you to do that. Even, you know, Windows Vista.
Yes.
Even XP. I mean, they allow you to create a backup image of your, you know, your computer.
Right.
Now, it's not going to back up your programs, your
program files. Well, actually, this does.
The program files as well?
Yeah, Windows 7 provides you the ability to create a system image, and it uses the IMG format.
Okay.
And it creates an exact image of your entire computer, and you use your system repair disk.
Yeah,
you boot off of that. And Windows provides you the ability to burn that off to a DVD or create the image on a flash drive or some external media.
Yeah, I mean, that must be different for 7, then, because...
Oh, Vista had that, and I was surprised. Because we all blew off Vista, I hate to say it, but it did provide that ability. Now, Gary, did that work out, or were you able to find that option?
I just found it today. I've been kind of busy doing other stuff, and I just got the laptop out, and I got to where you told me to go, to Control Panel. and I want to do that.
Now, I believe if it's, if you've got too much data, it will require multiple disks. It will ask for those multiple disks.
Yes.
So have those available. You don't want to get halfway through this thing and not have an extra disk.
Yeah, because it will take a long time to burn all this.
Yes.
But if you have an external drive or a large media, you know, like an external hard drive, I'm sorry, or a large flash drive, like a 32 gigabyte, and depending on how much data
correct.
You have in your computer. So,
okay. So Gary,
and at the end of it, it's gonna create a system repair disk. It's gonna say, "Have you created your system repair disk yet?" And you're gonna answer yes or no. But that should work for you.
It keeps popping that up all the time about the backup disk.
Well, Gary,
I thought I should make one.
Yes, I think you should. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for asking that question. Helps us help others. Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor Show. Gary asked just before we had to get out for the last segment.
Yeah, we had
really
to.
Quick. He said, "I want to ask another question," and we just didn't have time because we had to go to a hard out to pay some bills to have a couple commercials. But Ed, you talked to him, and you know what the question is.
I didn't talk to him, but I heard DVD. You know, so you know.
let's try to answer.
So it sounds like yes. When what type of DVD would he use when he wants to back up?
Mm-hmm.
And Shane, what do you think on that? What's the best answer for that? Because when you go to the stores, they sell several different types.
Yeah, plus, minus, and double layer.
Double layer.
Ooh. Yeah. Now, that would be
ideal.
A little bit more expensive, but you know, and most, if he's got a fairly newer laptop, most of those will have a multi ROM where it'll be a double layer. You'll see the DL, which most of them have, the newer ones.
That's printed on the outside of the DVD tray on either the laptop or the desktop. You'll actually see in that.
Correct.
That silk screening.
Yeah.
It'll say it's DVD plus R or minus R.
DL.
DL.
Yeah. Yep. Or Blu-ray or, you know, it'll say all those. And if
so
he does.
Which one's the best?
Oh, double layer by far.
So I've always, I shouldn't say always. I used to back up by putting in DVDs, and you know, you get your little stack of DVDs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know your backup is larger than any one.
Right,
two
you
or
could
three.
Use them as Christmas ornaments in a few years.
Yeah, well, so I've just gone to starting to use USB drives, flash drives. You know, 32 gig, and I can back up everything.
Ideally, if that was me, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but if a person has a computer and they have a lot of stuff on there and they're doing a complete system image, not only
yes.
is it copying Windows, it's copying all their data and program files. And you're talking about the computers, laptops now are shipping with a minimum of 500 gigabyte, 250.
Yep.
Okay. The flash drives, the largest you can get now are 32.
So if you have something like that where you're backing up, when I say everything that you need to for a system restore, but if you're backing up everything, wouldn't you just...
Buy an external drive.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
I buy an external drive.
All right. So hopefully that answers that question. Let's go to Madhav in Warren. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hello.
Hi. How can we help you?
Yeah, I have a question about Windows Vista, you know, Home Edition. This is a desktop of my friend's.
Okay.
And friend's daughter, she put a login ID and a password, and she forgot the password. Now we can't get into the system. And I wanted to know that is there any way to go around this one, you know, to get into the system?
So, Shane, you know, you have a retail store. People come in with computers like this all the time. Forgot my password. Help. How do I get access and change the password, reset it?
Or they bring in their boyfriend or girlfriend or husband's computer and want to get in that way. Yeah. We'll be very careful on that kind of stuff.
Right.
But if it's your computer, your best quickest way, and I know Ed has one way and I have one way. The quickest way would to just go into safe mode. Just you know, restart your computer, keep tapping F8. You know, F8,
mm-hmm.
and that'll take you into safe mode option.
Right.
And a lot of times that'll activate the administrator account.
Oh, that's true.
Yes, and you'll have your user account, and then you'll have your administrator account. Well, a lot of times they don't set up an administrative password. They may have set up a user password, but they didn't set up an administrative password.
Mm-hmm.
If you just click on the administrator user, that'll if there's no password, it'll log you right in. Then you can go into the user section of your control panel and just change the user's password.
I'm sorry, I didn't get it because there is too much disturbance on my line.
Oh, no, no, that's fine. Basically, what I said was there are two, well, there's a couple reasons, couple ways to do this. I have one way and Ed has one way.
Okay.
The quickest way for me that I would tell you is to, when you restart your computer, go into safe mode.
Okay,
safe mode is a diagnostic mode for computers. It's you go into it by teffing the F8 key several times at boot up. It sounds like you know how to do that. And then once you get that option, select safe mode with networking or regular safe mode, and that'll log you in. And what that does is it activates the administrator account. Okay, well,
we're going to listen to our podcast.
Yeah, we'll have a podcast. You can re-listen
to
that.
And the podcast will be up at by tomorrow.
By tomorrow or Monday. It'll be on the internetadvisor.website. Now, another way that you can get in there, and I like Shane's. I do, but... and it's, I figure possession is 9/10, right? Mm-hmm. So if I have the laptop or a computer, it's mine or a family member's, and I have legitimate use to try to get into this thing. And so I have a toolkit that I use, and it's a password cracker. It'll zero out the passwords in anyone's account from Windows XP to Windows 7. And it's running it's a Linux utility. And,
I didn't get it. Too much disturbance on telephone line.
Okay, so you can listen to our podcast. So if you go to the Internet Advisor website, then you can select the Toolkit tab. And when you select the Toolkit, I have bootable CD tools.
Mm-hmm.
And in the bootable CD tools, there's a link there to Heron's Boot CD. And that takes you to a site which describes how to download and create a bootable CD or a flash drive, which provides you all sorts of diagnostic tools to repair a computer, but also to reset passwords on laptops and computers.
Madhav, what I think we're going to do...
Can you spell me that name?
Heron
Boot CD?
It's internetadvisor.net.
So okay.
And I have the link there.
So what I'm going to do is ask you to hang on, and what we're going to do is talk to you a little bit... after this segment. Right now, let's go to Debbie in Clarkston. Debbie, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Oh, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Great. What can we do for you?
Well, I have been running malware byte scans on my 5-year-old Dell Inspiron laptop regularly for the last couple of years.
Okay.
I also run Microsoft Essentials, and I have a subscription to McAfee Plus.
Okay.
And I went to run a malware byte quick scan the other day, and the computer first told me that it did not recognize that executable file on my computer. So I went to your website, to the toolkit, and downloaded the malware bytes software again. And since the computer told me it didn't recognize the software, I ran a full scan. It took 4.5 hours to run a full scan on something I don't have videos, don't have games, only have text files, word process files on my laptop. And I have not been able to run my laptop since. When I boot it, it tells me that there is no operating system installed on the laptop.
You know, and I seem to remember this email. Did you ever get my reply?
Yes, I did. I wrote back to you. Is this Ed?
Yes, it is.
Hi. Thank you so much.
And I think one of the things I said is, boy, it's either you have a virus or your hard drive's about ready to fail.
Yes.
And that's what ended up happening? Was that your hard drive eventually failed?
Yes. I'm not sure yet because since I got your email a couple of days ago, I've had a full plate of other things to take care of, and I just have not been back to it. But I'm kind of wondering, the computer is 5 years old, and I know that's pretty old for technology.
I mean, unfortunately, with a failing hard drive, it's kind of like, you know, when you're running a full scan, you hit that one wrong bad sector of that hard drive. It was just enough to trigger, you know, the hard drive heart attack. And that sounds like what happened.
What a great, I love that phrase. Right? I hate it. It's a very terrible thing, But that's exactly what happens.
Your hard drive had one extra piece of fried shrimp he shouldn't have. Yeah. And, you know, that's what happens. And I tell people, when you have a bad hard drive and it's clicking and it's making noises, the last thing you want to do is play with it more. Because
if you
access that part that's got that bad sector, it's over. And it makes my job retrieving that data almost impossible.
So at this point, I mean, if your hard drive has failed and it says that you don't have a bootable operating system right now, what I usually tell people, do not power on the laptop.
Yeah, don't touch it.
The more you power down right now, the more it's likely going to fail, or the failing components.
And tear the hard drive up, right?
And yes, yeah. and the more unlikely it is you'll be able to recover the data on there, or have a professional be able to recover the data for you. Unfortunately, that's the point where you're at right now, probably.
Well, the good news is all of the information is backed up, so whatever has not been backed up is not valuable. I will survive and be able to go on with my life.
With the new laptop.
That's the other thing. But I have one other question about it. What about if I just buy a new hard drive, or is the computer too old to have that make sense?
Well, it's most likely probably a five-year-old, like you said, a five-year-old computer. So
yes,
it's probably a Core 2 Duo, most likely. It's probably dual-core processor.
Right.
So,
is it a laptop?
Yes, it is.
So it's going to be harder to replace that, right?
If Debbie wants to hold on, we can, after the break,
and she could certainly do exactly what she said, buy a new hard drive. If she created her manufacturing restoration DVDs when she first got the computer, she's golden.
Yep.
She could just restore those on the new hard drive.
Debbie, we're going to ask you to hold.
Thank you.
And then we're going to talk to Debbie when we come back from this break. We're going to pay a few bills here with commercials, and we'll be back to help Debbie right after this. Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor. We're here on our last segment for the second hour, but we were talking to Debbie from Clarkston, and Debbie had had a failed hard drive and some other things going on, like two antivirus programs. So we got to address that for everybody and help that. So what do we want to tackle first, guys?
We heard you said you had McAfee and Microsoft Security Essentials. All our eyebrows went up. I think you've got one too many.
And you can pick either. We have a preference.
We do. And you know, mine is Microsoft Security Essentials. That would be best for you. Quit paying the monthly or the yearly on McAfee. And just use the Security Essentials. That'll handle that. But back to your hard drive issue. You can always replace your hard drive. It's a very simple thing on a laptop. It's a couple screws and it pops out. The thing is, you kind of got to wait.
As long as you can find one for that laptop.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to find, and let's 500 gig, say a 500 gig hard drive for your laptop. It'll run you about $100, $90, $80, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
You've kind of got to do the math. Now, are you going to reload your operating system? Are you going to have someone else do it? You know, does the money make sense has this been a good laptop to you?
Yes, it has been a good laptop, but I don't know that I need to go the route of a hard drive. I'm just trying to think of some options before I spend the money on a new laptop.
Yeah.
And I was also wondering, someone had suggested that, because when I got the laptop, I purchased it through a family member placed the order for me and then assembled it, installed all of the software. I don't have a recovery disk, but I've been told that I could go to Dell and for maybe about $20 purchase one.
The media
is
for...
that an option?
Well, sure. Yeah, they do sell the media for your Dell laptop.
Mm-hmm.
You have a license. You have a valid license that you own the right to install.
Yes.
Windows on your computer. If you've got a disk that someone has, you can borrow because it'll ask you for your license. You'll just put your license in. So any old disk will work.
Right. And, I was looking at Rick Broida, who sometimes does our show with us, and he's known as the cheapskate on CNET. Because he's always looking for these bargains. And he
writes the cheapskate blog.
He writes the cheapskate blog. And on there, you can get an HP laptop for $275. It has a 15.6-inch display. It is. It comes with a half a gig of hard drive, a 2.7 gigahertz AMD, A6 processor. I mean, 4 gig of RAM, Windows 8. I mean, for under $300.
Okay.
Or you could spend $120 and get the...
You get a $100 hard drive and $20 restoration DVDs.
Right, I'm doing the math. I get it. Mm-hmm.
Or you
can... And you will love the new laptop.
Again, this is a low-end, very low-end HP, bottom of the line. But it's still a heck of a lot faster than anything you have right now. Or you can go to your big box shop or a mom-and-pop shop around the block and get that personalized service that's like Shane
that's
provides,
right. Mm-hmm.
And your place is
Comtech Services in Sterling Heights,
and he has
on what road and address?
Yeah, it's in Sterling Heights, but you can find me on online at our website. At
and he has a dedicated following of people that follow him from his job, and they'll come to his place because they trust him, and he talks to them, shows them their options, takes care of them. When they have problems, they'll bring it in.
So I either need you to open a store in Ann Arbor, come down here.
And that's what I like, with Debbie. That's what I like to do is I like to sit down with our customers and it's not always about selling them something. Let's weigh this out. It's going to cost $125 or $200 to do this repair, or we can put that towards something new and do that. It's what the customer wants.
And sometimes while you can get the low end, just buy the clearance, box out there or laptop out there, maybe with a little bit of help, you'd say, I'm doing this or this, and you upgrade one or two pieces. It costs you an extra $50, $60mm-hmm. bucks mm-hmm. to upgrade to some component that's maybe a little bit more robust, but then you get something that really works for you.
And you ran across this with your son, Gary, just a few weeks ago, where you purchased a laptop that came with a touchscreen.
That's right.
Which now he is the envy of his school, and everyone wants to turn in his MacBook Airs because they do not have touchscreens, and it's about the same profile.
I'm actually glad
it's an Ultrabook. It's a really, really thin, very sleek, very unique.
Who's the man?
That was Samsung.
Samsung.
Yeah. And I'm glad it was $618 out the door.
And for a touchscreen.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned the touchscreen because HP actually has a touchscreen.
They have a whole line of touchscreen devices. Amazing.
I think Walmart, I hate to say Walmart because I'm but you won't get the service at Walmart that you would with me.
Yeah, of course.
But they have, I think it's $500 for their entry-level touchscreen.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned, because remember, Debbie, when you go to this new computer, you're going to have to make the decision, do I want to make the jump to Windows 8 or do I want to stay with Windows 7? Because most will give you the option to do both.
Yes, and I'm using Windows 8 at one of the places mm-hmm. I work at, so I'm getting familiar with it already.
So you want to just go ahead and make the jump to Windows 8
at home, too. Great.
And if you need permission slips or anything like that, usually we offer those to give to your spouse that says, the guys down at WJR, at the Internet Advisor, they told me I'd need to go buy this new piece of equipment. So we'll do that
for you. I love it. Thank you very much. I appreciate your show. And Ed, I thank you so much for sending me that email. It had good information in it. And now I have even more information, and I'll be moving forward and upgrading.
Well, excellent.
Yes, enjoy your new computer.
Thank you.
Debbie. Thank you, Debbie.
It's so great helping people like that.
Yes, it is.
Love it.
And, that's what we do here, mm-hmm. right?
People do, but occasionally you get the ones that, you didn't tell me this. Well, I wasn't writing a book,
Well, we have people that contact us and they say, my computer's broken, can you fix it? We said, sure, we'll try to help, and we ask them some questions. We said, that's probably something you could go to your computer manufacturer. Oh, we spent 3 hours on the phone with them yesterday and they didn't help. Okay, tell me more, and they tell us a little bit more, and they say, maybe your ISP. Oh, yeah, we spent 2 hours on the phone with the ISP this morning, and they couldn't help either. And we say, after 5 hours with other people, you want us to do this in the next 3 minutes on the air in front of half a million people? Yeah, sure. Let's give it a try. Because that's what we want to do, right?
Yeah, right?
Our job is not only to help the individual that calls, but to also help everybody else that's either listening live or on one of our syndicated stations or on our podcast through iTunes. We have our podcast there or off of our direct site at internetadvisor.net.
Yeah, because it's all beneficial because the steps that sometimes the people go through, someone's listening and they'll have an aha moment, if you will.
That's right. And that's the goal of the show. We've started over 15 years ago, and we said we want to devote half of the time to promoting technology, internet technology specifically, but all types of information technology of the local area out to the world, right, and to each other. And then usually the second hour we devote to helping our listening audience have a better online experience. And if they can't get online, if they can't use their phone or their computer or their tablets or now a whole bunch of different devices, but that's our mission. So
they can go right to our website and read about all of us contact us through there too.
Absolutely. And we try to help, as you just heard Debbie thank Ed again for helping during the week. So we try to do that. Well, folks, we've come to the end of our second hour. This is Gary Baker and Ed Riddell, Shane Hamlin. We have Annie Nichols behind the glass. And Rich Lewinsky, I think, is still there on the board. Yep. Thank you guys for making it possible for us to do what we do for our folks. And especially people on the radio or listening to the podcast, we thank you because we wouldn't be able to do this show without you. We'll be back next week. You'll hear more of the Internet Advisor. If you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll be able to see a lot of the activity that's going on and some of Ed's really good resources. Thank you very much. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.